Yo.
There we go.
Okay. Alright.
Alright. Alright, man. What?
Not much. What's up with you?
I can't see you.
Oh, hold on. I accidentally turned off the camera. Alright, there you go.
I didn't buy you that not to look at you. So, we're talking about YouTube.
YouTube, yeah. I thought it'd be fun. I watched that video, and it got me thinking about just how much YouTube's changed. Because YouTube's one of the things, like, we've gotten to see its entire existence, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we've seen the beginning, the mid, like, well, whenever it ends. I kind of think it's over. But we've kind of seen this whole thing, and I get such a big part of my life. I wanted to sort of get your opinion, because I know... At one point, you said YouTube was the greatest invention of the internet. And I wanted to know if you still felt that way.
That sounds like something that I said, Stone. I mean, I think it has the best promise. It's probably my favorite thing. I think that I lost touch with it for a while. It's funny that you sort of timed this really well, because I just recently scrubbed my social media profiles. Facebook and Twitter are both dead. And I... just have the amount of unnecessary outrage in my life has just gone through the floor. It's great. It's great. I popped on today on Twitter just to see, like, what am I missing? And I saw just some tweet that was going viral. Somebody did a, like, you know how old you are? Look at this person then and this person now. That meme. And the meme was Draco Malfoy, and Donald Trump. Jesus. And somebody got really offended on behalf of Draco, like, and I couldn't tell if they were joking or serious. It felt serious.
Yeah, and I was just
like,
serious.
And it had 150 retweets, and I'm just like, forget it. I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. Yeah, so because it doesn't have the sort of interactivity that social media does, I lost sight of YouTube for a while in the sense of, like, in my forward brain and my consciousness, you know, so I've been thinking about it lately because I've gotten back into it since all that time that was once wasted on Twitter and Facebook is now being wasted on YouTube. And it's, you know, I do think, you know, I think it represents the best of the internet. I still think that, if I'm being honest. Well,
So for me, I watch a lot of YouTube. Like, I watch probably, I would say, an hour to 2 hours of YouTube a day. So I watch it outside of sports. It's the thing I watch the most. Cause I don't really look at a lot of TV anymore. If I do look at anything, I watch the Astros, Rockets, Texans, any major game. Like, I look at sports more than anything. It's really the only reason I have cable. But when I'm not doing that, I'm either on my computer, on my phone, or I'm watching YouTube. And it's funny to me because I struggle with looking at things on YouTube. Like, my particular YouTube bubble is so focused on this certain thing that I rarely get the videos I used to in the past. Cause you remember how YouTube used to be, right? Like, when it first came out, it was just a meme factory. It was like every funny thing was, you found it on YouTube. Like, it was Tay Zunday, the Leave Britney Alone guy, like, the old fucking memes, like, everything came from
Chocolate
YouTube.
Rain!
And Twitter kind of took its place in that regard.
I think it was Vine, actually. And
Vine did, but they killed Vine.
Yeah.
Like, Vine couldn't even sustain. Like, Twitter is, like, the one place I get all of my comedy from.
I'm analog. I still go see live shows like a chump.
Well, I mean, outside of, like, that, but, like, even that is still connected to Twitter, because, like, the reason I started Twitter at all, got on Twitter, was because of comedians.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them make jokes all the time.
Right, right. And
then Twitter just taught the world that pretty much everyone's funny.
You know what? I actually was thinking that about YouTube in a way, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think everybody has 5 minutes of funny in them, like, every once in a while, and YouTube became a place that's just... store all that, which is why I think YouTube is great, because I think that anybody can be funny for 5 minutes, or interesting for 5 minutes, or insightful for
everybody's 5 minutes. Got one great joke in them.
Yeah, yeah. That's why with YouTube clips, I'm sometimes impatient with stuff that's like half an hour. I'm like, how good is this? You know, like,
I can't watch a YouTube video longer than 15 minutes.
Bro, you made me watch. You made me watch one to start this conversation.
I know, and that's I'm gonna bring that up. So the video in question is Lindsay Ellis. She does like these video essays. And she just did a recent one called, I don't even remember the name now. Manufactured Authenticity Fun and Profit.
Yeah.
And it's 20 minutes. And I really enjoy this.
It's 30.
Okay, it's 30 minutes. I really enjoy her channel. I barely watch her videos because they're all 30 minutes long. But when I do pick one, I'm always impressed. And this one really impressed me because it talked about something I don't watch cake shows, but she starts the video by talking about this show, How to Cake It. And it's about this woman who makes cakes. And in making her YouTube channel, this woman figured out a way to make a lot of money on YouTube. And she found out that if she talked to her production crew, it doubled. Like, first she started talking to her production crew, laughing around with them on the video, and it doubled her views. Then she started doing more call to action. And so she sort of breaks down how this channel figured out how to monetize in a certain way, and then she takes a look at another channel that's figured out how to monetize this certain way, and the thing they're monetizing is an authenticity that you, the viewer, get that sucks you in. And I just thought it was a very good breakdown, and it was very well done. And then she uses sort of the tricks in her video to make it seem authentic, where it really creates this, you know, it creates this layer to it where it's like, fuck, like, I don't really know these people, but YouTube sells this fake authenticity. So I wanted to talk about it because it seems that's more what YouTube has become, is authenticity brands. Like, if you look at the biggest channels, where at the beginning it was kind of just jokes.
That's interesting that you phrase it that way, that this is what YouTube has become. I think that video also shares that angst that this is what YouTube has become, this like breaking the fourth wall to show I'm a real person and building these authenticity brands. It's not new, and she makes that point. That's not new.
Yeah, it's not new.
But it does, there is a sort of particular reliance on it. I always just thought of it as just lazy humor. I find meta humor to be mostly lazy at this point because it's easy. We always know how to do it, right? It's just become a vernacular, right? It's meta humor is almost an affect. You perform meta as opposed to like script meta at this point. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that she was doing that too. It was cute. Like, especially what's that thing? The old chair, and she's in the 30s clothes and she's fainting. It's pretty funny. And then she's doing the breaking the fourth wall bit. I mean, it was definitely funny. I actually thought, this isn't my YouTube at all. Actually, when I was watching it, and talk about maybe bubbles is a way to think about it, I felt like I was learning about a side of YouTube I didn't know existed.
I knew it existed, but I'm also not a part of that bubble. Like, I agree with you. Like, I hadn't heard of either of those channels she talked about.
My immediate reaction, I don't know if this is cynical or not, but I really thought, like, is your thesis that people have learned how to monetize a particular performance that's key to a particular medium? I was like, yeah, I believe that. This is a capitalist society. We're going to figure out how to monetize everything. I guess where I maybe am parting with you is the idea that this somehow represents YouTube culture in some big enough way where we have to worry about whether it defines YouTube culture. Maybe it does. I don't know. I guess I definitely, my corner of YouTube, like part of the claims to authenticity this thing was making was that by revealing its artifice, it's somehow less an artifice, which is a jump I didn't take with it. I was like, wait, that makes me feel like this is even more, like, calling attention to an artifice heightens its artifice to me, not reduces it. But I don't know. At the same time, I'm not watching I don't watch vlogs or anything like that. In fact, I'd never heard of, was it Lonely Girl? And I realized that's what Always Sunny was spoofing back in the day.
Yeah, that was a classic.
I didn't get that at all. So I just didn't. I mean, I don't feel that I can speak to what extent this is a part of YouTube culture in a way that's problematic or has overdetermined what expressions of are going to look like moving forward. I guess if you're going to try to be on YouTube to make money, yeah, I probably will. But I've always thought of YouTube as a sort of outsider art place. And in that sense, I think that community is thriving. Like, I was looking around today, and I was like, there's so much creative, weird stuff that would never be on TV, wouldn't be appropriate for television. Kind of, YouTube has created its own parameters in regards to what we expected, because it's a medium. I thought, and I don't know how much of this is just I'm looking at old shit, and how much of it is new, but, like, one of the shows I love, and I watch now every week, even though I just sort of fell into it, and it's doing the same thing. It's doing meta humor. So it's a little lazy, but it's 5 minutes of pop. It's Honest Trailers. And
yeah.
Honest Trailers is just this goofy 5 minute joke. Anybody can be funny once for 5 minutes a week, right? That's all they're doing. There's definitely a formula to it.
I'll watch them. I still watch them. I used to be super into that, but I've gotten less into sort of, and I'm not saying they're guilty of this, but like the CinemaSins sort of nitpickiness with movies.
Oh, I don't watch those.
Yeah, like, Honest Trailers is more fun about it, but so here's what's funny. I think we both see two different versions of YouTube. Mm-hmm. So my perception of YouTube is I can't find the weird funny shit anymore. My feed is so become something where I don't get that anymore. Like, if you notice, like, all the funny, like, the funny, like, really when I got into YouTube, it was Small Troops making weird, obscure alt comedy.
Right.
And then, like, so, like, it was Good Neighbor, it was Brit and Nick, it was even Cracked. And now, like, those channels died because, one, some of the people got more famous, but channels like Cracked, or Funny or Die, like, they died mostly because, like, they just couldn't make money on the way YouTube works now. They couldn't monetize. So, like, that sort of, those things are dying because they just don't make money because they don't fit the authenticity brand. Because, like, if you look at, like, the most popular channel is PewDiePie. I've never watched a PewDiePie video, but that's what he's selling. He's selling a version of himself that 66 million people love, apparently.
Right, right, right. The Cracked is an interesting example, because that's sort of an interesting overlap, because Cracked's on my list of channels I think are all-time just fun. Part of the reason is, and I'm looking at the stuff that I'm looking at. I'm looking at some of my list here, ones I wrote down, stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And I want to read you some of the lists, and I think all of these have, on some level, a common thread. And I think this is really going to tie into just who I am as a person.
Yeah.
Honest Trailers, DBZA, Ninja Turtles, Mario Brothers Brotherly Love, Nerd Writer, Every Frame of Painting, Crash Course Literature, and to a lesser extent, 10 Second Songs. What all of these have in common are poking fun at particular expressions of art. But Wisecrack, another great one.
Wisecrack's on my list. I love them.
Oh, I love Earthling Cinema, and I fucking love Thug Nuts. Yeah. I'll show them in class.
Yeah.
And the Crash Course Lit, same thing. They all are ultimately invested either through meta humor like Honest Trailers or through just, you know, nonfiction breakdowns like Nerd Writer or, you know, the video essay.
Well, yeah, I love those too. Like Lindsay Ellis that's what she is. She's in that sort of, except her videos are so long.
Right.
But
right.
She's in that same, like, cause I like, similar videos. I like Rossitron, guy who breaks down like action movies with that Nerd Writer style. Mm-hmm. This guy edits, like he's really good. I have Wisecrack. Screen Prism's also really good. They mostly do character studies. But my feed's filled with that. Like really, like I have that. I have Dark Souls stuff. And Video Game Donkey, but those are like the, and if you don't watch Video Game Donkey, you have to. He's the funniest guy on YouTube.
Video Game Donkey?
Donkey. Dunkey. He's the funniest guy on YouTube.
Hey, before I forget, dude, you're going to be really proud of me, man. I bought the Spider-Man game, and I'm playing it on regular difficulty.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. I immediately regretted it. I died so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, my version of Spider-Man is not, he loses to dudes with bats a lot.
Okay.
But but then I figured it out. I caught up. Now I'm great at it.
Okay. It's fun?
It's fun. Yeah, it's just it's better version of Shadows of War, which is a better version of Gods of War, which is a better version of Metal Gear Solid, right? I think the open world game has become the 2D platformer of our generation. It's just the default game mode that everyone's familiar with. They're all basically the same at this point. Is how can you customize it in a way that's unique to you? And there's a part of me that for like 5 hours I was like, man, am I really going to play another open world game? I'm just going to ignore the main narrative. And yeah, I'm still playing it. I'm obsessed with it. I was playing it right up until this. But to go back, okay, but that's just an aside. To go back to what we were saying about the video essays I like, the thing they have in common is that they break down, I think, excellent pieces of art, either through humor, like DBZA, it's kind of stripping it to its bones and showing you how it works, honest trailers, sort of meta humor, or Nerdwriter, Every Frame of Painting, Crash Course, just through the essay, just breaking down. And ultimately, all of these are forms of art appreciation. And I think because I teach literature, I'm drawn to that. So I love other people that are breaking down art forms, whether that be literature, comics, movies, music, whether it's through humor or whether it's through argument, if it's coming from a place that's clearly of adoration. So CinemaSins is sometimes like it's that part of, it's that genre of person that thinks pointing out plot holes is smart. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I have very little patience for that. But people that are just doing, like breaking down art because they either love the art form or love this expression of art. Like, Nerdwriter's great, right? Sometimes he'll tell you what's wrong with the film, but it's not coming from a place of disdain for that particular film. It's coming from a place of wanting narrative to accomplish X or Y.
Yeah, but I've kind of gotten bored with his videos.
Oh, I have too sometimes. Like, I'll loop back around. But that's the great thing about, or I'll watch one that's on something I care about. Like, I'm not going to watch his Donald Trump ones. But at the same time, like, but that's great about YouTube. Just, there's something else. You can forget about it and come back later.
Oh, yeah. That's why I like Wisecrack. I think they try to do a different spin with their videos, especially when they get into their, like, philosophical ones. Like, they try to, they do something a little different. Because I think Nerdwriters has found his recipe, and he does that every time.
Yeah,
That's
fair.
It's the same thing. Like, he's found his beats. Like, he's found, like, everything. Like, every video is essentially, I bet you could play them on top of each other and, like, do the same thing every time.
That's probably fair. But I think two things. One, his mouse one, he quoted actual scholarship, and that made me happy.
Right.
And they're well researched. Like, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And but I agree. Sometimes it's a bit of a formula. I think Wisecrack's a fun counterpoint because they have a cast of, like, four hosts, so they can vary it up, right? They got the Earthly Cinema guy, they got Jared and Philosophy, they got Thug Notes, and they have another one that I'm forgetting right now. But they have all the, so they have a different, they have a variety of style too. But those are great. They're so intellectually involved. Like, those are great to show students. Like, I show the Akira one when I have to talk about this scene in this novel that references Akira, and and it gives them a thematic understanding, not just a summary. It's great. Like, it's like, I just watched the Homecoming, and every once in a while they'll say something that I didn't, because they took a piece of art seriously that I did not. I watched today, in preparation for this, their Spider-Man Homecoming one, the Earthling Cinema, and at the end they break it down thematically, like, here's the emotional narrative you're hearing. And it pointed out something like, oh, I never caught that. That's definitely there. That movie is better thought through than I had given it credit for. It doesn't change my mind about it.
Yeah, I still don't like that movie. I saw that video. That video just made me realize, like, how much more they got Peter Parker wrong.
I think they got his context wrong. I think I'm okay with, especially with Spider-Man, there's so many versions of him now that I'm okay with you trying one that's your own, customized Peter. Like, I'm for it, but at the same time, it can go wrong. But on the other side of that, since we brought up Thug Notes, I think another thing that flourishes for me is black nerd humor, man. There's some good-ass black nerd humor on YouTube. Like, King Vader, do you watch the Hood Naruto videos?
No, I don't watch those.
Man, it's just the same. It's the same joke every time, but I laugh every time. It's this group of black teenagers recreating scenes from Naruto. Always some anime character or some other anime shows up, and they just have a dance contest. And it's like remixed versions of Naruto music. Like, that's clearly why he's really doing it, because he has these remixes. And they're just silly, and the tone is silly. There's just enough CGI, but usually it's just like whatever popular dances out there, them doing it at each other and making silly, like, he loves to do one guy running past the camera doing the Naruto arms out run.
Speaking of that, by any chance, have you seen the Naruto touchdown celebration from this past weekend?
Hell yeah, I saw that. That was funny. All right. I saw that. I was like, see, football, you could be cool.
No, it's
did he get flagged?
MMA. No, I don't know. They let him do stuff like that now. But I'm loving how popular, like, how just normal culture anime is now.
Yeah.
Because when I was in high school, like, it was so counterculture, and now it's just like, yeah, Naruto. Everybody loves Naruto. What are you talking about?
It's all Shonen Jump, is what I realized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like, DC.
Yeah, it's, especially with my students, it's come back big time. Like, yeah. Like I watch My Hero Academia, right? Because it's Shonen Jump, and I'm going to watch whatever they put out. And just that I watch that makes me randomly so much cooler in the eyes of so many of my students, because they all love My Hero Academia. It's, and it's great. They should love it. It's so much fun, that show. But I get into a lot of conversations with it, with my students. Another thing that's come back big, and online communities have done this, and we're sort of moving away, is Dungeons & Dragons, because you can play online now.
Yeah. There's, like, a couple of popular, like, Dungeons & Dragons shows. Like, I know Brian Posehn has his podcast, but there's another one where they did Dan Harmon, they animated or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dan Harmon?
Yeah.
I know Dan Harmon, I know Dan Harmon and licensed the Rick and Morty comic, and it's about Dungeons & Dragons. I haven't read it.
Is it?
But it's about Dungeons & Dragons, yeah. It's Rick and Morty play Dungeons and Dragons. It's,
yeah.
So that one came back in a big way.
Yeah. I've still never played Dungeons and Dragons.
You wouldn't like it.
I know I wouldn't.
No. Let's see. All right, back on track. Here's a question I have for you. Here's a question I have for you. Thinking about this, it sort of led me down memory lane. You know, this. What are some for you all timers?
YouTube videos.
YouTube videos or channels or people moments. Also, before I forget, have you watched Have you watched Hot Damn I Rock?
Let me look.
Mario Brothers Brotherly Love. They talked about it on the Bomb Pod. What's his name? Amin was all over it. He's the one who turned me on.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, oh, no. That was big on YouTube a couple of days ago, or like a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. We watched it today.
Yeah.
Brother Part 2 came out.
Yeah, I watched
out.
It. That video is amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, there's so much fun, nerdy black humor.
Yeah.
That is both, like, super referential, but also feels, I was going to say authentic, feels... I don't know. Feels like black nerd, and I say that based on how many black nerds I know. It doesn't feel like black people that aren't nerdy trying to be nerdy, but they're making it blacker. It feels like, if anything, the other direction, nerds that are black trying to be black. I don't know. Neither one of those really. But it's just like nerdy black kids making referential videos. It's just one of my fucking favorite things. Like Hood Naruto, Ninja Turtles, which is probably a name I shouldn't say too often, and Brotherly Love. It's so fucking funny. Like, I love, and that's what the thing I love about YouTube is, how else would I have heard this kid's silly skit that he would have, like, 20 years ago would have been on a video camera on a VHS tape, you know? And he's probably got 4 good ones in him. Like, and I can't wait to watch all 4 of them. Like, they're gonna be great. Yeah. And people like that, you know, whether it be because of access or just cultural structures, they don't make it, they don't get their voices out there. That's why I love YouTube, because, like, there's so much, because anybody can get on it. That's why. Any weirder with an idea can throw it up on YouTube. That's what I love.
Yeah. My actual favorite thing on YouTube is watching concerts I've been to.
That you've been to?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, like, just because, like, I was there. Like, one, like, you could go back and look at 80 concert. Like, say you went to a great concert, it's probably on YouTube.
Man, I never even thought to do that.
Yeah, like, that's probably my favorite YouTube thing, is looking at concerts.
You're such a fucking concert head. That makes so much fucking sense.
But I also like looking at other concerts, like concerts I didn't go to. Like, oh, that's a great set list, I'll just go watch that.
Yeah, I do that. K-E-X-P, the Seattle station. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that too.
They have great ones. Yeah. Tiny Desk Concert, I like those a lot. Mm-hmm.
Tiny Desk NPR, yeah, those are good.
Yeah,
those are good. My all-time favorite videos or channels, like, I really enjoyed Crack when they were at their peak. Like,
dude, I show the Crack Ninja Turtle ones in my classes.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
I wrote an assignment for that. Like,
when they hit it like 3-4 years ago, like they were on a very, very high note. Like, they were making really quality videos. Like, Crack, when they were at their best, they're still one of my favorites. I'm trying to think. Fart and Shuffle, which is a small little video of a robot farting, is probably my favorite video of all time.
See what I mean? We haven't even talked about how many Huskies Talking to Babies videos I've watched in my life.
Yeah. And Donkey, like, fucking Donkey is, I found Donkey pretty late. I guess maybe like a year, or Metal Gear Solid 5. You play Metal Gear Solid 5. If you ever start with his Metal Gear Solid 5 video, that was the first one I ever saw, and I've watched every one since. Like, he's probably the channel I've liked the most recently.
Are these comedy or what?
Comedy. They're all comedy.
All right.
It's video game play comedy. So it's like him and his friend are pretty much me and Javi, and he's Javi.
Right.
So his friend trying to take a game very seriously, and then him just fucking it up on purpose. So that's some of his videos, and then some of them is just him being like ridiculous, but they're funny. I can't endorse him enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to watch as soon as we get off here. So favorites for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw two out there. One is almost too obvious. Like, oh, yeah, those dudes. And the other one, I forgot this is a YouTube thing that crossed over. The one that crossed over, fucking riding the Jeep. Turquoise Jeep.
Yeah.
They started off as a YouTube thing. And then they started.
They're still a YouTube thing.
Didn't they start a label?
That's the label, Turquoise Jeep Records.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah,
Turquoise Jeep. Ride the Jeep. Even though I say that, I haven't listened to them like in a year, but. I don't know, the thing about YouTube is like, it'll be there, I'll get to it, I'll circle back. Like, yeah. I stopped watching Honest Trailers for like 2 years because I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
And then I'll circle back. The other one is Epic Rap Battles. That's an old-timer for me.
Yeah.
So fun. So fun. I watched those obsessively. I don't know what happened to those guys, they just stopped making them. I think they
ran out of ideas. Or they said they were taking a long break so they could like kind of sort of recharge.
Yeah, I think they just got tired of it.
Yeah.
It must be hard to keep coming up with ideas, and the last season was hit or miss, but the hits were big.
Yeah. Yeah, let me see. Froggy Fresh is still a classic I love.
I don't even know what that one is.
It's some little white guy rapper who came out maybe, this might be 10 years ago now, but he's kind of great and kind of terrible at the same time, in a way that YouTube, like, is perfect for YouTube.
Froggy Fresh, the baddest?
Yeah. Look at Best Friends.
All right. I mean, I'll find it.
Yeah, you'll find it. But yeah, like, just the old humor, like Good Neighbor stuff back when they were doing YouTube stuff, Brit and Nick, like I really enjoyed their channels. Like, just the kind of humor you would get back then.
Is Good Neighbor Donald Glover's channel from back in the day?
No, Good Neighbor's the two guys from SNL, Kyle and Beck.
Who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Derek Comedy. Derek, which is also good.
Yeah, fucking Derek Comedy. Yeah.
Derek Chronic, also great. Dude, early YouTube.
Bro Rape is a classic. It's still good.
It is. My favorite one is the keyboard and the not my real dad. Not my real dad.
Yeah. Help.
Yeah.
Oh, that's man. That's good. One. Dude, I think we gotta mention, especially because he's a Texan, the king, man, Brad Neely.
Yeah, Brad Neely.
George Washington rap?
Wizard Reader, like, that's a classic.
But that wasn't a YouTube thing. That was a separate...
Oh, was it?
No. Okay. No, that's actually a cool story. For those of you who don't know who Brad Neely is, he's a YouTube creator, I guess is what we're calling him. Just makes crazy rap songs. Oh, he fucking has a show on Adult Swim now. Talk about crossover hits.
This is like his third Adult Swim show.
You should, man, that's a question. Who are the biggest crossover hits? But, because like Cutie Pie, he's exclusively on YouTube, right? Brad Neely crossed over, George Watsky crossed over, Turquoise Jeep trying to cross over, Donald Glover,
yeah, it's probably Glover,
Glover. And so Brad Neely, he does all these. If you've seen Adult Swim, he does China Illinois, which were based on YouTube characters, Baby Cakes and Professor Brothers, and he did the George Washington rap. I think the George Washington rap might be the thing that made me realize that, because that thing is old.
Yeah.
It's like 10 years old.
Yeah, at least 10 years.
I watched it the other day. In fact, I'm going to pull it up right now. But let's see. Neatly. But it's the first thing I thought, like, holy shit, YouTube is amazing. That was the first thing I remember just effing loving.
Because I think you were still living here. So that was, yeah, you were still living here.
I was definitely
here.
Still living there. So it was before 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 10 years at least.
Yeah, fucking, yeah, Brad Neely. do you listen to I Am Kawhi?
No.
I Am Kawhi is a... So one of the other things I love about YouTube is all the, like, individual music creation. So, like, loop pedal mm-hmm. type people, you know?
Yeah.
And she is a loop pedal artist, if that's... I guess that's what you call it. And she does... And she's, like, this, you know, small Asian woman about our age. And she does nothing but 90s covers in this sort of mellow beatboxy tone. It's fucking dope.
I'm gonna have to check that out. And that's another thing, music. I still watch a lot of music videos. So YouTube is still good for that. And the occasional new rapper. Like, that's how, like, I saw D Antword for the first time on YouTube.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
They're definitely a YouTube creation.
Yellow Wolf, I discovered on YouTube.
Yeah, Yellow Wolf. We already said the Jeep. I'm trying to think of other music like I've discovered on. Actually, Toro y Moi.
Yeah. Tori Moi.
Yeah, Tori Moi, yeah. Like, that's one I learned, found on YouTube. Just a lot of stuff. Like, I think it's still good for that.
Yeah, it really brought back the music video.
Yeah, it's the only place you can watch them now.
And YouTube, I think, is also the reason we have things like Hulu and Netflix, too, right? It's definitely left a big footprint.
It definitely showed, like, you could stream, streaming video was the way we were going to go. Netflix sort of just rushed, like, Netflix took us there before we knew we were ready for it. And now it's the way of the world, which I also think is kind of, we lost something when we switched to streaming. And I think that's just mostly access to old art, particularly old film. Because if it's not on a streaming platform, like, people aren't going to watch it.
Well, I mean, how did we have access to it before though?
Blockbuster, or you bought it. Like, you could, so when Blockbuster was around and I lived with my mom and my sister, we went to Blockbuster probably 4 times a week.
You know what? It's interesting about access to old art. It isn't so much access, because, like, I'm willing to bet a lot of stuff you can find it, but what you miss out on, and this is interesting, I hadn't thought about this, you got a good point, is browsing. Right?
Yeah.
You try something.
Like taking a risk on something.
Because you've got to rent something.
Yeah. And our options were super limited back then. Like, I was either going to watch a movie or play a game I've played 1,000 times, because, you know, I'm not going to fucking buy a new game every day.
See, the limited options is interesting, because I would have initially said that as a reason that I like YouTube, because I there are no restrictions. It's more about learning how to navigate and find, because everything you want is here somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But because of the algorithms and the curating, like the bubbles, you lose opportunities for just like random discovery, for like treasure hunting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's some things that I've definitely rented because it was just next to something else. That's probably how I watched Dr. Strangelove, and that's one of my fucking favorite movies.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of anybody recommended to me. I was definitely the first person I knew who had watched it, and I definitely just picked it up randomly because it was probably in the comedy section. It was near something else that I wanted.
That's how I watched Wes Anderson. Like, Rushmore, I'm like, okay, this looks cool. So I watched it. Like, Rushmore wasn't a big movie. I was in high school when that came out, but that was just a risk I took. I watched Rushmore.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it, you know? And then I was trying to tell everybody I fucking knew to watch that movie.
Yeah, it's hard to find those sort of, like, those little epiphanies like that when these magical things just sort of cross your lap. Like, now everything is super curated, even the ways we engage with media, right? Because mostly we wait for things to enter our stream, like we wait for them to go viral, or somebody brings them to us. But if someone brings them to us, they're probably have an adjacent bubble, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn it, Joe. I'd like YouTube. Stop making me think about it critically.
No. If you really want to get critically, we could talk about its effect on children.
It's definitely made... It seems like, based on watching my sister raise children, it seems like it's made child raising lazier, because you can just shove a screen at them.
I think child raising was always lazy. I watched a lot of fucking TV. we've always had options like, hey, go do that. I can't do this right now. But, like, I don't know if you saw the Bad Daddy controversies that happened, like, like 7-8 months ago, I want to say.
Nah.
It's definitely within the last year. So there was this weird fad where the most watched videos on YouTube was this guy named Bad Daddy. And he made videos aimed at kids, but they were super, super creepy. Like almost like they were actually like pedophile dog whistles. So like he had kids in his videos and he'd be like, ooh, I want to be a bad daddy and playing with the kids and stuff like that. Kids loved these videos. Like they were top watch. Like kids like 8, 7, 8 years old would just watch these videos constantly.
What?
Even though it's still like these kind of weird sexual undertones to it. So what made me think about that. Okay. So my girlfriend watches this video, this YouTube channel called Mr. Kate. It's a woman who does like home renovation. It's just like your standard HGTV home renovation show, but she does it for YouTube celebrities. And so this has been my only way, like, cause I still watch it. I'll play Dead Cells on my Switch, but this has been my biggest outlet to see YouTube celebrities, like YouTube celebrities who aren't like PewDiePie level, you know, like this person probably has 10,000 to 50,000 subscribers, but they're famous enough on YouTube. They are on her show.
Okay.
They all act super exaggerated because kids like that.
Huh.
And like you see it and it's just like they do, oh, here's my weird voice or duh. But it's all super like their personalities are all geared to children because those are the easiest views to get.
Oh, that's to a make good point. Money. That's a good point. That's a good point. It's, well, I mean, man, that's where the money is in kids. That's always been true.
Yeah.
That's, or at least it's been true for a long time. What's interesting about that is, I mean, I don't know, these, okay, so this show you're describing, Bad Daddy obviously seems like it's targeting.
They've taken it down since, but it was the most watched YouTube channel for a while.
I have to find what that was, but that was obviously targeting children in possibly multiple ways. But the other show you're describing, that's not for children, is it? It's just appeals to children.
No, it's, so this show isn't for kids at all. It just shows people. Okay, so this show shows other YouTube celebrities.
Right.
And what their personalities are like. And as I'm watching it, all I'm seeing is someone who's gearing that personality towards children.
Hmm.
With the exaggerated personalities, like the weird voices and the sort of characters, I'm like, it doesn't feel like adult humor to me. It feels to me like Pee Wee Herman. But like not in the way where Pee Wee Herman was adult, like Pee Wee Herman was adult humor, but it was like the show itself. It feels like Pee Wee Herman when he did Pee Wee's Playhouse, where it was a children's show. It feels that kind of exaggerated.
So what I'm hearing is we need to rebrand. So let's see. I'm gonna try to spitball some marketing strategies. Okay.
Well, I was gonna say, you don't think the Catholic Church episode got us more kids?
I hope not. I don't know what the answer to that should be.
I don't know.
Here we go. Honey Boo Boo Stonians.
Yes.
Okay. maybe it's just Boostonians?
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 That should be our Halloween name. That's our October name.
Boostonians? Oh, we're right around the corner. Hashtag Boostonians.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to put some filters on our voice. Get that fucking shark song on here. You know that? Do you have little bit kids in your life, that little shark song everybody likes?
No, I don't think my nephew's old enough for that one yet.
If he can, apparently if he can comprehend any language, he's old enough because it's for babies.
Oh, really?
It's a baby song.
He's not in that baby bubble.
It's a family of sharks singing their relationship to the other sharks in cute voices. So the baby shark just says baby shark over and over and over. Oh, mama shark says mama shark over and over and over in funny voices.
Okay, I'm glad my nephew hasn't discovered that.
Yeah, you are. The sad thing is, like, this was made by someone who definitely has an understanding of music. It's not a badly composed song, but it is repetitive and it's for kids. And after you know, 10 minutes in a row of it, you really are. It really makes me want to get a vasectomy.
Yeah. seeing my sister and her son makes me want to get a vasectomy. And I love that little fucker, but I couldn't do it all day.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. In fact, if I ever have a kid, I'm going to be like, you too, take it away.
Thank you.
I gotta save New York from the threat of Mr. Negative, because I'm probably still gonna be playing Spider-Man. I prepaid for the DLC.
Nice.
Well,
Mr. Negative looks cool.
It's a good Spider-Man story, actually. It's like, yeah. I recommend, if you just like a good Spider-Man story, like, this is a good Spider-Man
story. I'm gonna play it. I'm just, I'm waiting till after I move to buy it, cause I'm moving at the end of the month. So once I'm moved and my money's bright, I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna buy that in Dragon Quest, and that'll be the next year of my life.
Yeah, the Spidey game, just, I don't know if you care about this, but it's a, I guess alternate universe. It's not 611 or 616.
Well, I don't know if you care about spoilers, but I know Miles is in it.
Oh, I've already been past that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I already know Miles. I don't really care about spoilers. I'm not playing it for the story.
No, I wasn't either, but the story's pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. But the they adjusted some characters' backstories. Like, instead of working for Doc Connors, he works for Doc Ock.
Oh, okay. Because
it's before Doc Ock has become Doc Ock.
Yeah. Similar to Spidey 2.
Yeah, exactly. It actually works better, because Connors isn't interesting. But also, they also tied Doc Octopus' eventual transformation. They're obviously saving him. But because I don't think he's going to turn in this story, but they're setting it up. But but it's tied to Norman Osborn. Like, he's, like, it seems like where they're going is that he's going to become Doc Ock to take out Norman Osborn. Who's the mayor of New York?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool. They're doing this sort of like, they take it. You can tell they could borrow some of the ideas from, was it Amazing Spider-Man, the Andrew Garfield movie that isn't great.
Yeah,
but he looks like Andrew Garfield in it, so they're obviously doing a visual shout out to it on that level. But he seems to be involved in the creation of many villains, so it seems like they're building him up in a different way by tying him to the mythologies of other characters, which is interesting. I can't think of another villain like that. Like, this villain created all these other villains that hate him and hate Spider-Man. It seems like that's what they're doing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, maybe Luthor is the closest?
Luthor would be the closest. Yeah, and they're definitely borrowing a lot of, he was already Luthor Light.
Yeah.
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 He's Luthor with worse hair.
You don't like the waves?
That's just some ethnic appropriation. He ain't got no wave like that. Come on, man.
Well, yeah, he's an evil white dude. That makes the most sense.
I thought it was funny that he was drinking Henny. No, I don't know. He's not drinking Henny.
Okay.
Oh, man. So,
I've been reading a lot of Avengers 4 spoilers, but it's not really much, you know?
Well, I mean, other than fucking Hawkeye being in it, which wasn't really a spoiler.
Oh, yeah. My guess is he's going to play a very major part in the victory.
In the comic, they have that moment where Wolverine stabs Thanos. This is before Wolverine was the superstar that he was. He was just sort of this little side character. He's kind of he is kind of to the X-Men then what Rocket is to the Guardians now. He's a sort of weird, funny, short guy.
Yeah.
He's really violent. They have the same exact role on their respective teams. So I keep thinking they're going to give somebody the Wolverine moment. And the Wolverine moment, the narration says, the least likely of them lands the killing blow or something like that. Because he stabs him with all six claws right in the chest. But, of course, he's basically immortal, so it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering who could have that moment, like the least likely of them moment. And Hawkeye or Rocket. But if Hawkeye's going to be there, he makes the most sense.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Hawkeye. Because they made a big point, like, that's why the original ones are still around. Like, this is their movie.
Yeah. I still feel like that's so obvious. They must have one more, I won't say twist, but card to play. And I still want it to be the legacy characters. I still want to see Miles and Shiri and Cassie Lang. And I want to see Hawkeye 2. And I hope Hawkeye 2 is because it's Kate Bishop in the comics. I hope Hawkeye 2 is actually his daughter, because he has his two kids.
Yeah.
And two of them died, but two of them lived. So he's been training her to get revenge. Like, that's what I want it to be. Yeah. In fact, I want it so bad I'm going to call it that that's what they're doing. They're going to have those legacy characters and then find some way to unwind the clock so that they can keep, so they can get their childhoods back or something. They're going to hyperbolic time chamber this. I know it.
Probably. I don't know. Do you think they're going to make Nebula a big character?
Well, she was huge in the original story.
Yeah, she's huge in the comic. Yeah, do you think they're going to go that way where she becomes the villain?
She becomes... Well, Nebula becomes the villain for not very long. Because Thanos wrecks her shit. Yeah, I think they'll do it. I think they'll do it. I don't think that she'll be central to the plot the way she is in the story from the 90s, in the Jim Starlin one.
Yeah.
But I do think they'll have to shout it out. Everyone's waiting for it. Because the moment in the comic, I don't know if you remember, is Thanos cripples her with all these diseases and she's just this wretched being. He somehow loses the glove, it falls off somehow, and she crawls over to him and puts it on, and she rewinds the clock back 24 hours, and she's the one who restores everybody to life, not intending to. She just wanted to she wanted to undo something else. As a result, if I remember correctly, everybody gets restored. Like, she wasn't trying to save everybody. She was trying to do this other thing. But it also means that she goes back to being completely withered. So she drops the glove again. So that moment is, if they keep some version of that, it won't take long to, in terms of narrative. And then you can write her right back out because she's again all crumpled up again. So I think they'll keep that moment. I don't know that they're going to make it, I don't know that they're going to make it central, because Nebula, even though I like who portrays her, I forget her name. She's just not as interesting as Gamora. No. And it turned out Zoe Saldana randomly was the best actor on that roster. Her performance,
probably.
Her performances in all the movies are great. I just have loved Zoe Saldana though. So it just might be me.
Yeah. Because Brolin's up there. I think Brolin gives one of the best performances.
And him and Zoe play off each other great.
Yeah. Great performances in Marvel movies. Maybe that's another pod topic.
Oh, shit. Off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Best performances.
Oh, best performances? I'd go back to the original Aunt May from Spider-Man.
Oh, you're like not even going to MCU. Sam Raimi. Oh, you're not even going to MCU. You're going all time.
All of them. Wait, like, I would go back to...
Are we going comics? Or are we going... Fuck it, let's talk about it now. Are we doing comics or are we doing...
Comics?
Yeah, comic movies, best time performances. Heath Ledger, number one, right?
Heath Ledger.
That's the
one.
Michael Jordan. Yeah. Like, it's not even worth bringing up, really.
Yeah.
Best performances. Where's Hugh Jackman?
I don't know. I don't like those movies as much as you, but Logan is great.
How much do we forgive him for the terrible ones? That he tried his best.
I can't forgive him for X-Men Origins, which I think is the best X-Men movie ever made.
It wasn't made. Days of Future Past wiped it out. What movie are you even talking about?
I know, but that movie's so bad. It's like, I love that movie. It's so bad. I love that movie. When he destroys the helicopter with his claws, god damn, that's great.
I'm not gonna lie. Even now, I own it. I'm not gonna pretend I don't.
That movie's great. That movie's good trash.
It's
good trash.
But I'll tell you what. Even now, when I watch it, I'm like, the first two acts shaky, but they can save this. Nobody really likes Gambit, you know. And Will I Am, like, I remember that character from the 80s. Nobody else does, but I remember him. Like, they can pull this off. They'll stick the landing, and then they fucking super don't, because that Deadpool shit is nonsense. But it starts off, like, the first two acts aren't terrible. They're not good. But they could have gotten away with mediocrity, but they went for it with that weird Deadpool.
Yeah. I can't believe they spent so much money on that movie.
Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool on the list? Because sometimes it feels too easy for him. Like, you're just kind of playing yourself, but you are kind of Wade Wilson, too.
No, he's not on my list.
Yeah, he's not on my
list. Ian McKellen's on my list, though.
Fuck yeah. Defining.
Especially in the first one. The first X-Men movie, he is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he is amazing in that movie. And Ian McKellen, for sure.
There are moments in there where I'm like, they got this British white man quoting Malcolm X, and I'm 100% on board. Like, yeah, man, you earned it. Fucking do it.
Yeah, and McAvoy. McAvoy is really great, too.
Bro, the scene where McAvoy and Stewart talk to each other across the time stream, we need you to believe again. Like,
McAvoy is great. I think McAvoy is better than Fassbender in all those movies, too. I think McAvoy is the clear MVP of those.
You know who Fassbender should play?
Who?
He should play Piccolo, because that's who he is in the acting world. He's the one who's there to show that we're taking this seriously. He's going to show up, and he's going to put in his time, but he's not surprising you, and he's not carrying the day. If Piccolo's all you got, better get the Dragon Balls ready. But if Piccolo's there with other people, now we're talking.
I agree. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always that. There's always that guy who's just around to prove things are serious. Right?
Yeah.
Like Genos in One Punch Man. He's just there to get his ass whooped so that we know this is serious. Yeah.
Okay, let's see. More great performances.
Great performances, man. I love Zoe Saldana as Gamora, so she's really up there for me. Especially because Gamora is one of those characters that I'm like, who gives a shit about Gamora? Like, she's mean warrior woman trope, like, but they turned her into something in the movie. Like,
yeah.
She's got nuances and shades to her character. I'm always impressed by a character that makes me not... Like, that makes me like a character I didn't give a shit before.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Robert Downey Jr.
Tony Stark. He's gotta be, he's like Tim Duncan. It's hard, I think, to pick out any one moment where, like, you can pick one, I'm sure, but it's not like hit after hit after hit. It's just consistency. And he defined the team, right?
Yeah.
But, there are moments where he's not even the best player on the, there are multiple times where he's not the best player on his team. And there's multiple times where Tony Stark isn't the best actor in his movie, but he's always.
Not when he's in a movie with Chris Evans. Chris Evans is the best actor they have in one of the major roles.
Yeah, yeah. I feel something's like, I love Chris Evans as Captain America. I wanted him when I saw, what was that movie, Sunshine?
Yeah, that movie's so good in that.
And, which a movie I don't remember because I watched it super high, but I remember liking him and the weird guy who ended up playing Scarecrow, right? That he was in it too?
Yeah, Cillian Murphy.
Sometimes I feel like he's wasted on Captain America, man. Can't be challenging.
Yeah, like Snowpiercer, he's great in too.
Yeah, Snowpiercer's great.
Yeah.
Let's see, other all-time performances. Fuck, man, I don't know. There's a lot of just solid ones. It's, you know, there's not that many that rise to the top because the floor has risen, right? Yeah. Of what our expectations are. So there's not that many transcendent ones, really, because everybody's pretty good, right?
Especially outside of Ledger. Ledger's the most, is still the most, it'll always be. Like, he won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So we see another comic book movie get an Oscar, like,
right.
that's
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the biggest. That's probably still the biggest thing that happened to a comic book movie is fucking Heath Ledger's Oscar.
Ian McKellen, I think, is a solid runner up.
Yeah.
As Magneto. And he almost saves X3. He does his best.
Yeah, he tries.
Yeah, yeah. No, that movie is just, you know, leftover scenes from X2.
It's what's his name? Brett Ratner. Brett Ratner has no style.
Right, right. He's.
Like, he has no. Like, he's not a director, or he's not a good director.
I got a question for you. How about Jackie Earle Haley as Rorschach?
And Watchmen?
As Rorschach.
Yeah.
I know you're not a fan of that movie, and, you know, neither am I, really.
I actually like the director's cut. I think the director's cut is a good movie.
Yeah.
I don't think the one that was in theaters was very good.
Yeah, I own the director's cut. It's better.
And the guy they got to play Ozymandias is just not good. Like, and it's such an important role, and he almost ruins that movie.
Yeah, he was. I thought he was fine, but I see why people don't like him.
He's not good. He's up there. I'd put him up there. It's the problem I have with his portrayal of the character is that it's Zack Snyder's interpretation of the character. You know,
right.
He only focuses on the violence, you know?
Right, right. That's always been the thing he got wrong. Like, there's not a lot of nuance in Zack Snyder. A lot of love, but not a lot of nuance. I'm going to put up there Alfred Molina in Spider-Man 2.
Oh, God, yeah. I can't believe I forgot that one. Yeah. Molina's great.
Yeah.
That talk about a character I never gave a shit about as someone getting, like, me to care about it. Like, Molina's great in that movie.
Yeah, you can tell the Spidey game knows that because they're doing...
Yeah.
He doesn't look or sound like Molina, but they're modeling that same relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I feel like there's an obvious one we're forgetting, though.
There's probably dozens we're not thinking of that are, like, really good performers. Robert Redford in Winter Soldier's good, you know? But it's like, it's not a exciting role.
Yeah, it's kind of like, he doesn't really have to do much.
No. And it's clear he's the villain, like, very early. Oh, like, that's why you get the big name.
I'll give you a favorite moment where Anthony Hopkins as Odin is mostly trash. He's voting that in.
Anthony Hopkins gets away with being trash in a lot of movies because he was great in a couple movies.
Bro, he is the British Nicolas Cage, man. I'm telling you.
Yes.
He's the British Nicolas Cage. Like, that guy, like, I don't trust you being in this. I don't trust you being in this. And
he gets away with it because of that fucking accent. Like, oh, no, he's good. He's like, oh, yeah. No, he's not.
His Odin is just John Lovitz from SNL. Acting, you know?
Yeah.
Except for when he gets to play Loki pretending to be Odin. Then he actually, like, is doing a thing. Like, he's actually, like, leaning into the character and doing an interpretation. Like, it's actually, like, it's actually performed. Instead of just recited. He shows up and he recites, right? He doesn't actually act, but he's actually
acting. They didn't pay him to act. They paid him to show up.
That's probably in his contract. Yeah. I ain't acting. Yeah. I'll read this shit. You want me to wear what? That's fine.
But that's another good performance. Loki. I can't think of his name right now. Tom Hiddleston or whatever.
Yeah.
Loki. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another guy who took a character I never gave a shit about and made it something.
So the top five might be Gamora, Loki, Joker, Doc Ock, Magneto?
Yeah, I think I'm good with that.
Yeah? I really want to give Blade an honorable mention. I want Wesley Snipes back so bad. I could miss Wesley Snipes.
Oh, man, I'll just give us another Blade movie.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I'll totally watch another Blade movie.
I would watch another Blade movie too, bro. I just watched the trilogy.
Yeah, like, I would totally watch another Blade movie. Just give me a dumb action movie with fucking Wesley Snipes kicking ass and killing vampires.
And saying, I guess they're jokes?
No, they're not.
Like, what does he say? Some motherfucker's always running uphill, and then he kills somebody, or something like that. I'm like, what?
I'm for it. I want it. Give me another Blade movie.
Yeah, yeah. I would.
Del Toro might do it. Like, just like, get Del Toro back. Do another Blade movie.
Yeah, ask Del Toro what it would take to get him to do another Blade movie. I want him to do. The rumor I heard was they were going to bring him back as if he was always there. Like, they're going to tie the original Blade movies into the MCU.
Okay.
And the way they're going to do it is that they're just going to let the character age, and he has a daughter now, and he's training a daughter. To replace him. So they'll probably maybe kill him, or I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. Maybe do a lone wolf and cub type thing.
Okay.
But that's, I love that idea.
Oh, please. More Blade.
Yes, please. More Blade. It makes, more Blade and more terrible CGI blood, because there's like so. that was one of those, like, CGI is going to solve all our problems. We don't even need the blood machine. We're just going to animate it. It's going to look great.
Yeah, no, that's the era of Spawn.
Spawn's coming back in the worst idea ever.
Ugh.
If Keith David's not involved, I'm not interested.
Yeah, like, we already have the best version of Spawn, the HBO show. Like, you're never gonna beat that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're never gonna beat it. I can't believe that one succeeded. Blade's a terrible idea.
Like, we need Spawn.
Spawn, sorry, I do mean Spawn. Blade is not a terrible idea. Not making Blade is a terrible idea. Making Spawn is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
It's like, but hopefully they'll see Venom fail and they'll realize Spawn's not a good idea.
God, Venom looks so bad. It looks so bad. I feel bad for Tom Hardy.
You know what? You know what, Tom Hardy? There's a part of me that thinks Tom Hardy thought Venom, challenge accepted, because What are the odds? He's gonna do his best to Daniel Day-Lewis this and take a mediocre movie and make us think it's good. Just sheer acting effort.
You can't make Venom good.
No, there's no way.
There's no way.
Apparently, I'll say this, and from what I see from the trailers, the movies aren't doing this anyway. But they've removed Venom completely from the Spider-Man universe and made him his own thing. Mm-hmm. He's kind of cosmic now because it's symbiotes from space.
Yeah.
So they took him off-world and gave him his own story at another place.
Yeah.
The comics get really good reviews.
Okay.
And and it's always in the tone of, like, I don't know if this is good or if I can't believe a Venom story is readable. But it turns out when you take Venom away from Spider-Man and just focus on how cool he looks and give him this super zany sci-fi Marvel cosmic story, that he works, because out there fucking everything works.
So I kind of keep up with Spider-Man comics, but the last thing I heard was that there was a Venom planet.
Yeah, and where the symbiote came from. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like a rebel, I guess, like by speaking to his host or something like that. Like he's a trendsetter. I don't know. All I heard is it sounded ridiculous, but
yeah, no, it sounded absurd. And like I said, yeah. It sounds bad when I hear it. That's basically it. He goes to space, yeah. And Brock is now friends with the symbiote, and the center of the symbiote can talk the whole time, but has refused to because it's supposed to take over their host. Okay. But they become friends, so it's like, I don't know, I guess he watched Naruto and liked the Nine-Tailed Fox, and that's what he did. So, and now, because of that, he's, you know, on his home world, and he's, like, on the run, so he's, like, like a rebel. Like, that's what I've heard. And what I've read is, like, that it weirdly works. Like, they can't believe it, but it weirdly works. And part of it is that they introduced the symbiote as having a personality, so his character actually is, like, his voice is interesting, like, he's not... I don't know. I haven't read it, the symbiote apparently is carrying the story. Eddie Brock is secondary. In the Spider-Man comics are also getting more absurd because somebody figured out how to split Spider-Man in half, so Spider-Man is separate from Peter Parker. And apparently it's hilarious. Like, it's a funny story. Like, I don't know what, like. It's,
okay. It's, I hope that's a joke because, I don't know, this seems, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
But you know what? After, did you ever read Superior Spider-Man?
Doc Ock? I know about it, yeah. When Doc Ock takes over his body, like, I hear it's really good.
It's fucking great. I can't believe it. Here's the thing with Spider-Man. Here's the thing with Dan Slott. And Dan Slott said this, and I jumped it about halfway through his run, and I only read about a third of it. It's like now an iconic Spider-Man run. But, he said, like, we're going to embrace the ludicrousness of this character, and you're either on board or you're not. But this concept is, we're not grounding it anymore. We're going to just get absurd with it. We're bringing clones back, we're doing all of it, and we're just going to play, and if you don't like it, you don't got to read it. And I was like, you're bringing the clones back? I'm out. No, thank you. But then I went to the Spideyverse one, where they do the multiverse, the Spider-Man multiverse. And it was ridiculous, and it embraced the ridiculous concepts of the Marvel multiverse, and it was super fun to read. And then I was like, all right, I'll read Superior Ock because you pulled this off. I'll see if you can do this. And it's one of the best Spidey runs ever. It's fucking great.
Wow.
It's great. It's just fun and ridiculous and manages to have Peter Parker as a great kid beats to it. Like, it's just, you have to just accept, like, what happened? All right, sure. You know, like, they're just not even pretending to have stakes, you know? They're going all out on zany, like, unexpected adventures. And the mythos that Spider-Man is there's a certain character to Spider-Man, not just a power set. And character beats. That's all they're doing. Like, the stories never even feel like they're gonna have consequences because they're so ludicrous. Mm-hmm. You know they won't, and he knows you won't. So let's just go with it. And see how these characters act in these ridiculous situations. And at the end of the day, he writes great characters. I even read his, they brought back one of the clones and spun him off. Ben Reilly?
That's the main clone.
Yeah.
The one, he was Spider-Man for a while.
And he was the Scarlet Spider again in a new costume, and he lives in Houston. And I read it, and it's pretty good. It's just another Spider-Man.
Okay.
It's sarcastic Spider-Man instead of quippy Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He's just over everybody. And it's a tone I weirdly enjoyed. Like, it's just great. Like, I really recommend them.
Okay. I haven't read superhero comics in probably a decade. So maybe I'll jump back in for Spider-Man. I always love Spider-Man.
Dude, I mean, I don't know. Like, again, Dan Slott, it's love it or hate him, but apparently most people love him. And I'm on board. I've only read like a third of his things. He writes it for like a decade.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to the beginning and read all of it.
Okay.
He's the one who let Spider-Man grow up and start his own business and actually be a success for a while.
Yeah.
And then he did the brilliant thing. It's like, oh, I always assumed I'd be a loser. I don't know how to run a business. So it's a whole different level of can't make your rent.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It works super good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He hires someone else to be Spider-Man and makes him a fake Spider-Man suit. He's like, you do it. You know, like, I'm too busy. I gotta run this company. It works. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's a good Spider-Man story. He just hits the right amount of, like he turns Spider-Man kind of into Finn.
Okay.
It's just well-intentioned dum-dum.
Yeah.
But weirdly with it in the right moments, you know? Because he's good at being Finn, but not good at anything else, right?
Speaking of Finn,
yeah.
Did you watch the end of Adventure Time?
Not yet. Not yet. Okay. I say when I found out they left, did you watch it?
Oh, yeah.
I heard everybody loves it.
It's okay. It's good. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to like taint your opinion of it.
All right. Well, we'll come
back.
There's
some parts of it that didn't work for me.
I saved the last two seasons to watch in one run when I heard that they were ending the show.
Oh shit! Like a lot of this past season was like miniseries.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like you saw the Marceline one, right? Like there's like three of those in a row.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Yeah.
I want to absorb it all at once. Like the two okay. seasons, I'm just gonna go because they love. Okay. Even though the events tend to wrap up, although they do, you know, they do have a sense of stakes because stuff comes back, stuff has consequences.
Yeah. Oh, the adventures, a lot of stuff comes back.
The adventures tend to wrap up within themselves and on the mm-hmm. on the small scale, but
yeah.
across seasons they'll have like big thematic arcs. So I want to just track the last two seasons. The last time I saw Finn, he was sort of in this giving up on his dad type stuff, and it was sort of mm-hmm. in between. So I was like, that's a good place to stop because I feel like
okay.
they need to generate momentum for the next thing. So I have not watched. I've been deliberately not watching. And you know how hard it is for me not to watch Adventure Time. So yeah. I have not watched any of the last two seasons. And now that it's wrapped okay. up, I'm going to watch it now by myself on my own. So I'm not caught up in the conversation. I'm glad actually. This is one of the few moments where I don't want spoilers. I saw one minor spoiler that I approved of. But mostly okay. I'm avoiding it because I want.
What was the spoiler?
Marceline and Bubblegum are together.
Yeah.
Part of me was like, good for you. Should have just been doing that the whole time, though. Like
Steven Universe kind of made that possible.
Yeah, really, I've heard that's good.
From what I've watched, like I've watched maybe like 10, 15 episodes. It's good, but Adventure Time was the only one of those kind of shows where I was like obsessed with, you know, where I had to watch it.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah,
I watched like two episodes of Steven Universe, and I was like, I get why people recommend this to me, but I already have Adventure Time, so I don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
and Adventure Time is more the things I like. I'm still a boy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I feel the same way about, and I've always wanted to go back to it, but I feel the same way about Avatar: The Last Airbender.
I've never watched it.
I watched the first season.
I hear it's amazing. That's what like, everyone says. Swears by it. Everybody swears by it. I've never watched
it. I watched the first season. It was good, but I didn't really see what the big deal was. But then I read later, like, the later seasons are the good ones because now they got an audience, so now they can, like, play in their universe. It's pretty straightforward, kind of kung fu anime. And when I came out, I was like, I already have Naruto. I don't need this.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll go back because, everybody says it's amazing. And and apparently the second, I think it's three seasons long, and the second and the third one are the ones where they're now allowed to, like, play in the world they've built as opposed to just having to tell this fairly conventional, like, you know, kung fu superheroes on Star Wars-y story.
I have to maybe that'll go on my list of shows I need to catch up on.
Yeah, you've been missing out, man. There's been some good shows. Like Netflix has been killing it. American Vandal, man. Why start with those? Those are so much fun.
Which one's American Vandal?
What's that about? American Vandal's the one where it's about a high school where some kid gets kicked out because he spray painted dicks on everybody's car.
Okay.
In the teacher's lot. Have you heard about this?
Sort of. Is it a documentary? Is it a docuseries?
It's a what's it called? Faux doc.
Or is it a spoof?
No, it's yes and no. It's a what's it called?
Okay.
That genre.
Mockumentary.
It's a mockumentary. So they made it up, and it's funny. And a lot of the funniness comes from how absurd this silly crime is. Like,
that sounds like what I want.
Yeah, but it slips into social commentary.
Okay.
Because it becomes about the way public schools set up kids from certain backgrounds to fail from the jump. So of course this kid who ends up being innocent, I guess that's a spoiler. I guess I don't know if he's innocent because it's also spoofing Netflix shows at the same time.
Yeah,
you're led to believe he's innocent. I don't actually remember if he's innocent. That really isn't the narrative. Like I actually, it's kind of like Serial, the podcast. It's no longer about whether or not this person did it. It's about how fucked up the system is.
Okay.
And how it makes things like innocence hard to know. And how it makes people certain backgrounds set up to take falls that maybe they wouldn't because, you know, it becomes this sort of almost parable for the bail system in a way that's really good. It's like what Dear White People should have been and it has using this sort of parody of a familiar format, that one, the teen drama, this one, the mockumentary, to develop, to deliver a topic of about structural inequalities from the perspective of young people who are about to enter those systems. So it's an interesting voice. But Dear White People never gets over its own genre. It doesn't transcend it. It gets stuck in the tropes of, like, who's fucking who, right?
I never saw Dear White People either.
I finished the first season. It's all right, but it never grows past it never gets past its genre. Like, it's at the end of the day, it's a high school drama.
I actually went to middle school with that guy, Justin Simeon.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, we were in the same homeroom.
That's
why I haven't watched it, because I'm like, oh, I know that guy too. Like, I knew him at a time in my life. It's kind of weird.
Tell him
he's famous.
Tell him that finding out characters' backstories through exposition is lazy.
Yeah, but it's the trick every show does now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Every show
uses
that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I say it's lazy. Everybody can do it. Okay. It's a fine show. It's fine. Don't get me. I'm shitting on Dear White People a little bit. It's fine. But I think that spiritually, American Vandal is a better version of the same thing it's trying to do, but it's doing it with different tools. And it's just funny. And the second season just came out. And this one is about poop crimes. And I'm wondering if actually it's a shout out to Always Sunny, if they took everybody the poops episode and just turned it into a premise for a season, because there's so many things in it that I'm like, that has to be an Always Sunny shout out. That has to be an Always Sunny shout out. At one point, somebody even goes, because poop is funny, right? Like, I was like, that's the same line. Like, it has. They must be aware of it.
Yeah. Speaking of Sunny, sorry, have you watched any of the new season?
Nah, it's not on Hulu yet.
Okay.
Have you?
All right, say no more. Yeah, I watched first two.
How is it?
It's amazing how that show is still funny, like as funny as it is. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's amazing that they are still able to find humor in the same thing that they've been doing since, like, probably around season 2.5, season 3. Like, really, when they nailed it, they've just gotten better and better at it, and they're so good at it.
They had some lulls, man. Like, season 6 or 7, the one where they do the high school prom, that season isn't good.
But I think that season still has some gold in there.
Probably. I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
When I say not good, I mean by their standard.
Half the episodes are totally, they're also not afraid to just, like, okay, this is getting stale. Let's just do something different right now. Or let's switch. Like, let's make D Dennis. Or let's make Charlie Dennis in this situation where they change, like, each of them. Like, I love that they're able to play around with that. Because there was one season where they did that almost exclusively every episode. Like, somebody was acting like a different one of them.
I want to
say it might have been 7. But that's really where they found their creative surge again, because, like, that's how well they know the characters.
Oh, their willingness to reinvent is always been what makes the show move. Especially, I hear Mindy Kaling. Is she sticking around? Is she on the show?
I can't tell you without spoiling.
All right. But apparently, some of the reactions I've seen are that she was like, man, she fit right in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's Dennis.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Lady Dennis is exciting to me, especially because I love Mindy Kaling.
I love Dennis. Dennis, I love Dennis. I know you're not the biggest Dennis fan, but I love Dennis.
Well, here's the thing. I love fucking AP Bio. Have you seen AP Bio?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it.
It's definitely like, it's PG-13 Always Sunny, but it's like PG-16. Like, it's getting as close to R as it can get. They make jokes on there I cannot believe they're getting away with on network TV. And it's just Dennis. It's just Dennis with, like, give Dennis complete success in the world. And then take it away. Okay. And then take it away. And see what he's like after the fact.
Okay.
Right? Except just enough of a soul to be human. Because that's the thing with Dennis, right? He's just a complete sociopath.
Yeah, he is.
No, he doesn't have that. He's just a wounded narcissist.
Okay.
Right? Which can be sociopathic, right? Because he's so caught up in his own experience that he's not caring what happens to the rest. But just occasionally he'll peek up over the water and be like, oh, this is hurting people. I guess I'll stop. But it's always begrudging. So it's a toned down Dennis. It's, like I said, a PG-16 Dennis. But the jokes they make on there, I'm like, this is it feels like an FX show.
Okay.
I really recommend it. I really like it.
Okay.
I really like
it. Well, that's on the list.
And it also clearly loves Wes Anderson, because it's so,
yeah,
the Wes Anderson feel to it too.
All
right. Yeah. All right, but with that, I'm going to go watch American Vandal. Because now I'm talking about it. I want to see it.
Alright.
Dude, it's super good. You should check it out.
I'll check it out.
Alright.
Check it out.
See you later.